So with that in mind, with Paul's mentioning there in mind of whatever things were written before were written for our learning, we're going to look at the beginning of the nation of Israel and its deliverance from slavery and its journey to the promised land of rest, of which we just sang about. Because it was fraught with challenges, difficulties, and disappointments. In that historical event, we see all kinds of examples which can help us on our own journey in this present life. The battle between flesh and spirit, the challenge of faith. Indeed, the events of the Exodus and wilderness wandering have served as an object lesson for subsequent generations of God's people for millennia. The only question that remains is whether or not we as individuals will learn from history. So, this first lesson, we're going to be learning about faith and perseverance from things that were written before, as Paul references in Romans chapter 15 in verse 4. We might recall the complaining of those to whom God offered deliverance. Go with me to Exodus chapter 2. Notice there, beginning in verse 11, it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting. And he said to the one who did the wrong, "Why are you striking your companion?" And he said, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" So Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So,
and I have the lighter off. Those lights went off and the TV went off.
All right, we'll just pause there for a second. So we probably blew a circuit. All right. It's downstairs. We just won't have the screen. that won't show you a whole lot. Put your glasses on. Binoculars, that might be good. Not sure why those would be on different circuits, but okay. So we just read from Exodus chapter 2, verses 11 through 15, wherein Moses he intervenes on behalf of his people. He's been raised in Pharaoh's household, but he intervenes on behalf of his people. And it appears that his leadership was welcome as long as it didn't get personal. We love for there to be leadership as long as it requires nothing of us. Leadership is great for correcting the other guy. But when its direction runs counter to my wants, then we complain. And that's what you see going on here. Yeah, go ahead, intervene and kill that Egyptian. But now you're going to try and talk to me about getting along with my brother? Who made you a leader? Who do you think you are? Is what the reaction that he gets. It's interesting to note that Moses then fled in the wilderness to sojourn there for 40 years before he's called by God to return to Egypt. Recall that Moses did some of his own complaining when he was called by God 40 years later. The demands of life are occasions for many of our complaints. I've been there, you've been there. Yet they're also opportunities for the building of faith and perseverance. And we sometimes, in the moment, fail to see that. So when Moses obeyed and returned to Egypt, the complaints didn't stop. So you go over to chapter 5 of Exodus. Exodus chapter 5 and verse 20. It says, "Then as they came out from Pharaoh, they met Moses and Aaron, who stood there to meet them. And they said to them, 'Let the Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us.' So Moses returned to the Lord and said, 'Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he's done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all.'" Who's complaining? The people are complaining because Moses has intervened, because he was called by God to intervene. But now Moses is complaining to God because God hasn't done what he promised to do, as far as God can see. So this is after Pharaoh increased their workload, because Moses had gone to him and said, "Let my people go to worship God in the wilderness." Instead of looking beyond Pharaoh's evil resistance, the people gave in. Moses likewise complains to God. It seems to be the pattern of life that when correction, improvement, restoration, or reformation of any kind is needed, that things initially get worse before they get better. We even have a phrase to that effect. Always gets worse before it gets better. We know that with surgery. We know that with other things that we experience in this physical life. Why would we be surprised that that's true in this case as well? Yet we complain. And these are the times that try men's souls and reveal the true character and faith of those who suffer. Some are revealed to have faith of wood and hay or straw, while others have faith of gold or silver or precious gems, to borrow from Paul's writing to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 3, verses 12 and 13. But staying there in Exodus, you go over to chapter 6 and verse 9. "So Moses spoke thus to the children of Israel, but they would not heed Moses because of anguish of spirit and cruel bondage." The people weren't in any mood to listen. Ever been there? Not in a mood to listen? Not in a mood to hear about it? Oh, I've been there. You've been there. We know what this is like. Yet God is still gracious to them, even though they're not in the mood to listen to God or to listen to his messenger, Moses. Go with me then to chapter 14 of Exodus. Chapter 14 and verse 10. It says, "And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, "Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians"? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness.'" Okay, we told you so. We told you so. Didn't we tell you, "Leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians"? They would have rather stayed in bondage, in slavery to the Egyptians, than to die in the wilderness. You recall, after the death of the firstborn and the Passover, they had no problem plundering the Egyptians and leaving Egypt as quickly as they could. That sounded good to them. Things were going well. They were being given things and being told to leave. This is wonderful. Yet at the first sign of conflict, their reaction is to complain and to second guess Moses and his leadership. It's not easy to be a leader, because you got to make a decision. And the decision might look good initially, but if it turns sour, or it looks like it's going south, then people are going to complain. People will second guess. One would think that the crossing of the Red Sea on dry land and the destruction of the Egyptian army in that sea would have forever laid to rest the complaint. I would like to think, were I to have witnessed that despite my suffering that would come later because of thirst or hunger or whatever, I would know that God is with us. And I'm sure that there were some Israelites who were that way. Trials of life oftentimes make for short memories. And that is made abundantly clear by the children of Israel in the wilderness, because the complaining continues. 3 days later, they're murmuring about water. 3 days later, they're murmuring about water. Well, water's important. You don't get your water, you don't get fluids, you get cranky, you don't get food. A month later, they're complaining about food. Chapter 16 and verses 3 and 4, it says, "And the children of Israel said to them, Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. And the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." And so, sometime later, again, they complain about water. Chapter 17, and verse 2, "Therefore the people contended with Moses and said, Give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, Why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? The people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, Why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, What shall I do with this people? They're almost ready to stone me." Jump down to verse 7. Eventually, that's remedied from the when they strike the rock and the water comes out. And they call the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the contention of the children of Israel and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" And while waiting for Moses in Mount Sinai, the people get impatient. You recall, they turn to idolatry. They build a golden calf. That's a little old, just a little over 3 months from the Exodus, from the time of the Red Sea, parting of the Red Sea. And then about a year later, after leaving Sinai, the people again complain about food. Numbers chapter 11. Jump on over there. Numbers chapter 11, and beginning with verse 1. "Now when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it, and his anger was aroused. So the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some in the outskirts of the camp. And the people cried out to Moses, and when Moses prayed to the Lord, the fire was quenched. So he called the name of the place Taberah, because the fire of the Lord had burned among them. And the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense cravings. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up, and there's nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. Now the manna was like coriander seed, and its color like the color of delium." He goes on to describe that a little further. The complaining. We're familiar with this over and over again. However, the absolute low point for that, and there are many other that I've skipped over, and there's many more yet to come. But the absolute low point for that first generation of free Israelites was the report of those to spy out the promised land that we read about in Numbers chapter 13. Numbers 13 and verse 21. And so they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob near the entrance of Hamath. And they went up through the south and came to Hebron. Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and there cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between two of them on a pole. They also brought some of the pomegranates and figs. The place was called the valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the men of Israel cut down there. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. So they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And then they told them and said, "We went into the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. Their cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan." And Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." And the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." The report of the 10 spies is that it was indeed a land flowing with milk and honey, but the inhabitants are too strong. It cannot be taken, was their conclusion. Where would we have been in that crowd? What would we have been saying? What would we have been thinking? What would have been our rationale? And the response of the people is even more faithless complaining, beginning in chapter 14. "And all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?' So they said to one another, 'Let us select a leader and return to Egypt.'" Just as a passing thought, the people that they saw in the land that they didn't think they could beat, were they stronger than the Egyptian army? Had they forgotten that God, they couldn't beat the Egyptian army as a people? No way they could have defeated the Egyptian army. But that didn't stop God from delivering them. And there's no way they could have defeated the descendants of Anak, the giants who were in the land and the fortified cities, except God be with them. They were leaving God out of the equation. The response is faithless. They preferred to die in slavery or to have died in the wilderness to fighting for the promised land. Moses, Aaron, Joshua, and Caleb all insist that with God's help, they could take the land. Yet the people prepared to stone these messengers of faith, these messengers of hope, these messengers of perseverance, verse 10. And what's God's response in verses 11 and 12? He's prepared to destroy the people and start over. But Moses intercedes on behalf of the people in verses 13 through 19. Go with me now to chapter 14. And notice in verse 26. Chapter 14, verse 26 says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, 'How long shall I bear with this evil congregation who murmur against me? I've heard the murmurings with the children of Israel murmur against me. Say to them, As I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have murmured against me shall fall in this wilderness, all of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above. Except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. You shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. But your little ones, whom you said would be victims, I will bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. But as for you, your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and your sons shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years, and bear the brunt of your infidelity until your carcasses are consumed in the wilderness. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days for each day you shall bear your guilt, 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. I, the Lord, have spoken this. I will surely do to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me in this wilderness, and they shall be consumed, and there they shall die. And the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation murmur against him by bringing a bad report of the land, those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, remained alive of the men who went to spy out the land." The people who had seen all the signs of Exodus, the plagues, the parting of the Red Sea, would die in the wilderness for their lack of faith, would not enter the land. Their children would be the ones to enjoy the promised land that they despised. Yet even after this complaining and second-guessing continued into the next generation, there was the attempt to enter the promised land without God. Chapter 14, they decide, "Oh, okay, you were right, we were wrong, let's go take it anyway." And then there was Korah's rebellion and the complaint by the people after the capital punishment was meted out to Korah in his rebellion. They complain about that in chapter 16. There's the complaint about the water again, and then Moses' own sin in chapter 20. The complaint about the journey and God's provision by the second generation. Go to chapter 21 of Numbers. Chapter 21 and verse 4. It says, they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. And the people spoke against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread. So the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. And therefore the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against you. Pray to the Lord that he take away the serpents from us. So Moses prayed for the people. And then the Lord said to Moses, make a fiery serpent and set it on a pole, and it shall be that everyone who is bitten, when he looks at it, shall live. So Moses made a bronze serpent and put it on a pole, and so it was. If a serpent had bitten anyone, when he looked at the bronze serpent, he lived. You've got God looking after the people despite their complaining. Yes, judging, punishing, disciplining. But time and again, it gets old, doesn't it? As we're reading these quickly like this. So I try to cram in more and more of these. We go, okay, we get the point. And we start complaining about their complaining. It's so redundant. We get impatient with them because we have the advantage of hindsight and the complete revelation of God's plan. We imagined that we would not have been among the complainers. But what is it that we complain about? What about our own faith? And with that perspective, perhaps we wonder why God made them wander in the wilderness. Why did God extend their suffering? Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 8. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, this, you might recall, is after the 40 years have gone by. And they're about to enter into the promised land, and Moses is reviewing things. Moses says in verse 1, every commandment which I have commanded you today, you must be careful to observe that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. He goes on to talk about the fact that their garments didn't wear out, that God provided for them in a number of ways. He compares it to these things, these trials, these difficulties, to a father disciplining his son. That God promise, he reiterates the promise that God has brought you to this land, this land of promise. The admonition that Moses gives here, you can keep reading all of that through verse 20. We don't have the time to do that. Is to obey God and keep his commandments. That's what keeps coming back to. They're to remember that God led them through the wilderness to accomplish three basic things. He put them through all of this to accomplish three basic things. To humble them. Yes, we need that. To allow them to hunger and suffer and recognize their utter inability to save themselves. They could not save themselves. And to test them. To see if they would act in faith and keep his commandments. Can't be known until that's put to the test. They're put to the test. And they failed it time and again. And to teach them. That's the third thing. That true living comes not by eating physical food. But by the word of God. That's where true living is found. All of this was discipline, just as a good father chastens his son. Success and prosperity will spoil the generation that has not known adversity, for they come to have a distorted view of their own self-worth, which causes them to view wealth as an entitlement rather than as a blessing from God. And I think we're there in our culture. We have entitlements. We deserve this. You hear that all the time. They deserve this. You deserve this. That's their right. Where do we get that idea? That we deserve those things, that we have a right to those things? Who gives us those things? God does. And when we quit acknowledging God as the giver of these things, he has every right to take it away. When we provide our children with all that we or others are capable of giving them, they do not learn the godly characteristics of self-denial, sacrifice, and the love that undergirds those virtues. That's why we need to discipline our children. When blessings are viewed as rights or something earned that we deserve, then we become impatient and arrogant and forget God and forget who we are relative to God. The blessed generation must humbly recognize it is blessed by God's grace, or it will forget God, and it will raise up a generation that does not know God, and it will be cursed. It will be destroyed. It will be judged, just like every other nation before us. Indeed, the events of the wandering in the wilderness continued to serve as a reminder to future generations to not repeat the sins of their fathers. Psalm 95 was written by David. So we're talking centuries later, after the wilderness wandering, after the period of the judges. David writes Psalm 95, and the first seven verses of Psalm 95 proclaim God as our maker, our sustainer, and Savior, and they affirm our dependence upon him for life and all of its blessings. God is the giver of these things. And the last four verses of Psalm 95 warn us not to repeat the sins of those who died in the wilderness and were not permitted to enter the promised rest. Therefore, the admonition is given that we must not harden our hearts, but hear his voice. Know God's ways and not rebel against them. And other psalms reflect upon the rebellion in the wilderness. Psalm 78 extensively recalls the power of God in the Exodus and the parting of the Red Sea and the rebellion of the people in the wilderness and relates it directly to the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel. Specifically in verses 56 through 67 of Psalm 78. And then Psalm 106 appears to be a song of Judah toward the end of or following their captivity for having repeated the sins of their fathers who rebelled against God in the wilderness. It keeps coming up. And the prophet Ezekiel, in Ezekiel chapter 20, preached to a people who were in captivity in Babylon because they had behaved like their forefathers whom God had brought out of Egypt. And in verses 33 through 38 of Exodus 20, he observes a cycle. I said Exodus, Ezekiel 20. Psalm, verses 33 through 38 of Ezekiel 20 talks about a cycle of bring people out of bondage, wandering in the wilderness, and entering promised land, being repeated in the behavior of the nation of Israel. And that's why they were in captivity. Ezekiel writes from that perspective while Judah is in captivity and making the point, teaching, hoping that there might be a remnant that will get and see the pattern the wilderness pattern that is throughout Scripture. I've made a few applications to us in our modern age as we've gone through this lesson, but not very many. But in the next lesson, I want to talk about our wilderness wandering. Our wilderness wandering. The New Testament evidence for this type of the Old Testament that we've studied. We recently studied in the last quarter. We observed some of these things as well. But we'll use that lesson to make some observations about the fulfillment of that Old Testament type and some applications to ourselves.